You're listening to Talk of the Rock with your host, Kayla Darroche. And today we're going to talk about PSP, which affects shellfish in the area of Kodiak. We have a couple of guests with us today. We have Julie Matwiu, and we have an intern who we'll introduce shortly. And we also have someone on the phone, Bruce Wright, so we're going to bring him in at this moment. Hey, Bruce, can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, awesome. You're on the air here in Kodiak. And we're just introducing ourselves. So, Julie, why don't you introduce yourself and maybe do a little introduction for your intern as well.
Yeah, hi. My name is Julie Matwiu. I'm with the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program, and I'm the program agent here in Kodiak. I'm based here over at Near Island at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center. And I'm here today to talk to everyone here about the issue of paralytic shellfish poisoning and introduce a project that we're kicking off and just chat a little bit about that. And I want to introduce Natalia Partida. She's an intern through the local Latin American Women's Association, and she's been working with me the last couple weeks doing some sampling and also some PSP sample processing, and I kind of just drug her along.
All right, and we'll talk to you in a second, Natalia, but first I want to ask, what is PSP and what does it affect?
Yeah, well, PSP is it's paralytic shellfish poisoning. It's caused by the dinoflagellate of the name Alexandrium in Alaska. And it's a naturally occurring toxin that occurs in the algae. And when shellfish, particularly bivalves, ingest the algae and under normal feeding conditions, they accumulate the toxins and then can pass them up through the food chain.
Okay. And what is the presence of PSP on the island?
Well, we had a very severe illness in June, early June, and that toxin level that was associated with that illness was extremely high. The person became sick from eating butter clams, and the toxin level was close to one of the highest that we have seen on the island. But currently, we don't have ongoing monitoring, so it's kind of just unknown right now. We assume that there are toxins present. Most of my research suggests that we always have toxins, especially during summer months and even into winter months.
Okay. And what kind of shellfish can be harvested around Kodiak?
None.
None.
PSP, the toxins will be accumulating primarily in the bivalves. So any bivalve, mussel, butter clam, any type of other clams, and anything with a two shell. They're filter feeding shellfish, and they're ingesting the algae. If we have the algae present, the phytoplankton present, then they will accumulate the toxins. So it's really, it's basically you're taking a risk to collect and consume shellfish in our region without it being tested. Additionally, the toxins can be transferred up through the food chain, so anything that's feeding on the clams can be affected. For instance, predatory snails and crab, and particularly Dungeness crab, they can accumulate the toxins in the viscera. And some folks like to ingest the crab butter, and that's particularly dangerous, again, in untested crab, because you can have the toxins in the viscera. Fortunately for crab, if you split and clean the product prior to consuming, then the toxins do not occur in the meat. But with shellfish, with bivalve shellfish, there's no way to determine whether something's toxic or not.
And people do harvest. They take that risk around the island.
We do have populations that do take that risk. Mostly during the winter months when you expect the toxins to be lower. We do have a small handful of people that might be consuming shellfish through the summer months, but we try to get the word out that it's very, very, very risky in the summer months.
All right. And could you give me a little background about your research into PSP, Julie?
Yeah, well, I actually came to Kodiak in 1999 to study paralytic shellfish poisoning. I got my master's degree from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I studied PSP on the island. It brought me here. I was doing algal monitoring in the water, as well as shellfish monitoring at approximately 7 local sites along the road system. And upon returning back as a faculty with the university, I've continued to do some of this work as part of my position.
Okay. And Bruce, could you give me a little background about your study into PSP?
Sure. I'm Bruce Wright. I'm the senior scientist at Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association. And in 2006, I and a colleague received funding from the North Pacific Research Board to kind of do baseline monitoring for PSP along the Gulf of Alaska and the length of the Aleutian Islands all the way to the Commander Islands in Russia. We collected or had our technicians and colleagues collect samples and monthly for a whole year. And that kind of gave us a little bit of a baseline. We thought that we might be able to then see a shift in that baseline as the climate warms.
What did you find based on that baseline and the trends?
Well, we found that I'm a theoretical ecologist, so I like to come up with theories. And one of my hypotheses was that that PSP hadn't entered the colder waters of the Bering Sea. And we found that our furthest north sampling sites were the Pribilof Islands, and we found PSP everywhere we looked. So it shot down that hypothesis, and subsequent to that, there's other data to support that at Alexandrium, the organism that makes PSP, is all the way in all of our oceans surrounding Alaska, including the Arctic Ocean, the Chukchi and Beaufort Sea. So we didn't find the end to the extent of paralytic shellfish poisoning, but we did identify some of the hot spots where we can get really high levels of PSP. Of course, Kodiak, we've known about Kodiak for a long time, having high levels. My work out in the Aleutians identified some of the hot spots out there and then some of the hot spots in southeast Alaska.
So at the minimum, PSP is a danger in Alaskan waters, and that's why you're working on this monitoring technique. Can you talk a little bit about your research and this new technique?
Yeah, well, this newly funded project, we are funded by the North Pacific Research Board, and we're really excited to bring in our project team. We were here last week introducing the project and kind of having a kickoff for the project. And this research is essentially building on a lot of other projects that have been done, particularly Bruce Wright's work out in the Aleutians. He's got a tremendous data set out there, and as well as the sample homogenous that we can bring into this project. I have been working with Yuzinki and Old Harbor here in Kodiak, and again, we're building on the data set that we have here, and together we're going to bring our samples forward, all the data that's associated with these monitoring programs the last few years, and bring those sample homogenates together and use that capacity to refine a newly developing test kit. So the first phase of the project will be looking at the refinement of the test kit that we introduced last week, and using these previously tested samples to streamline that test. The next step would be to bring that test into our regions underneath the instruction of the PIs, and the third step would be to introduce that test into the communities.
In phase one of a three-year study?
A three-year study, yes. Okay. We just started this summer.
All right. Bruce, could you tell me a little bit about how the state currently tests for PSP?
So the state uses two techniques. The historical technique tests for total toxicity, and it's called mouse bioassay. They actually use genetically similar mice and give increasing toxicity from samples to these mice, and the mice die based on how the mice react or die. They can calibrate what your test results are. The newer technique that they're trying to use, that they do use successfully, is called HPLC, stands for High Performance Liquid Chromatography, and it gives more detailed data. We've been using that almost exclusively for our recent studies because of the high resolution data it gives. The state has a certified lab. It's the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation Environmental Health Lab, and they produce just some awesome data. And that's who we've been going to get the data. It's expensive though. Even though it's subsidized by the state, it's still pretty expensive for individuals to go to the lab. It takes at least several days, sometimes a couple of months, to get your data back. So the test kits would be super valuable for monitoring in near real time or real time out in the environment. And if everybody that is involved with PSP monitoring, whether it's for research or other needs, just to monitor what your beach is doing, would love to have this test kit validated and out there, because you could go to your beach and collect a couple of clams and have an idea of what's going on with paralytic shellfish poisoning on your beach. We're pretty excited that that this test kit might help bring us closer to that realization.
Can you talk a little bit about how the test kit differs and builds upon the current state testing?
Julie, go ahead and talk a little bit about this, the little monitoring device.
Yeah.
With the antibodies on it.
Right. So this is an antibody-based test, different than the biological test that Bruce described, the mouse bioassay, and different than the chemical test, the HPLC, that Bruce described. So it's an antibody-based test, and what's exciting about this test is that it is being designed to be put in the hands of a lay person and being able to take that out into the field or into a remote location. I was recently working on a different antibody-based test, but it was more of a laboratory test. There has been a product on the market that is also an antibody-based test, but it's been a pass-fail test. And again, what I find exciting about this test that we're working on is that it's going to actually give a digital readout. It'll give a number, a numerical value of the toxins present. And that's going to just be extremely valuable for us, both in terms of research and in terms of giving the community an idea of what levels they're experiencing at any given time. So this test is an electrochemical test, and it's an antibody test, but then the signal is going to be transferred through electrically to a digital readout.
So I would, as a harvester, be able to take a sample and get that result very quickly by using the test kit on site?
Ideally, after perhaps phase three of this. But there's going to be a lot of questions to ask along the way, and there's a lot of work to be done before this test would ever be in the hands of somebody that would be using it to eat shellfish. So we've got a number of things to work through, including user capacity, as well as the test itself. So we've got some hurdles ahead of us. But ideally you would get a digital readout of what you're seeing. And that could then be used to further direct your safe harvest program.
Okay. So can you explain to me that in the future, as a harvester, what would I be doing with this test kit? What would that look like?
During phase three, we hope to have this test in the hands of the communities that are participating. And I just wanted to call out the communities here in Kodiak. We have Old Harbor, the Iluktuk Tribe of Old Harbor, the City of Yuzinki, and the Shunak Tribe that are collaborating with us on this project. And then, Bruce, you can pipe in, but Bruce's communities out west include Sandpoint and King Cove. And again, we selected these communities because we already have this ongoing data set. So this information coming from this project will feed into the existing data set that we already have, as well as refine this test. And then hopefully we'll be out training participants on how to use the test. And eventually, we hope to have this test to be available on the market for people to use.
Bruce, I understand that you're located in Anchorage.
Right. Our headquarters office is in Anchorage, and most of my work is in the Aleutians.
How do you make those connections? How frequently do you go out to the different locations that are involved in the study?
Well, there's 10 communities out there that I work with. In many of the communities, we've assigned the Village Protection Safety Officers, the VPSOs, to make collections. In some of the communities, it's the Environmental Protection Agency has a program called IGAP, and it's the IGAP coordinators. It's their environmental coordinators that make the collections, and then I go out to some of the communities from time to time, or when they come in here, we do trainings. So we all have email and telephone, so we keep in close contact. The goal is to collect monthly samples on the species that are prevalent in their areas. Some locations don't have blue mussels or don't have water clams, and so we use blue mussels for monitoring. A few of the communities, the people eat the butter clams, so they're most interested in monitoring those beaches so they can get an idea of how those beaches react during the year and from year to year. But, I mean, we can't certify a beach as a safe beach or even safe months because we'll get blooms in the middle of winter, but it gives them an idea of what's going on. And when it comes to safe consumption of butter clams or bivalves, other clams, I recommend that people go out and monitor the beach and see what's happening using my samples. And then when the levels are low, the community go out and make a collection and hold on to that collection until they take and send a subsample to the lab and get the results back to know if they're safe or not. So we stay in pretty good, pretty close contact, especially during the winter months when people are excited about clamming. Now, some of our beaches, in Sandpoint last year, they never dropped below the regulatory limit, and so people just didn't collect at all last year, and it was because of this data that they were able to see that their beaches were not safe, and so they looked to King Cove for clams, and in the case of King Cove, they used the safe harvest technique, or they were supposed to, most of the people did, and they would make a collection, have them tested to make sure they were safe to eat, and then eat them.
When are toxins highest in the season in shellfish?
So in the Aleutians, it's usually July. And down the coast, southeast Alaska, it could be June or even May. It tends to be when the waters are a little bit warmer, above 9, 10 degrees Celsius, and there's a lot of sunlight. And there's a number of precursors, things that promote PSP blooms. It could be fresh water moving into the environment, amount of sunlight, nutrients. There's a lot of different things, but it's so out in the Aleutians and even in Kodiak, it's usually around July. Cook Inlet's usually around July is when it peaks. If it's a big enough bloom, if it's a strong, powerful enough bloom, the toxins can maintain high toxicity levels in butter clams for well over a year in some cases. So that means you can have a bloom in June. The butter clams become toxic in June, and they stay toxic till next June. So that would mean that there's really no safe months for consuming bivalves in Alaska. So the only safe technique right now is to go out and make a collection and hold them until you have those tested for toxicity. And if they pass the test, then you can eat them. With this test kit, eventually, our goal is several years from now, if we can figure out this complex of toxins and get this test kit tuned up, eventually we can have people test their own clams right on the beach.
Yeah, Bruce, I just wanted to qualify what you just said about the toxin patterns. In Kodiak, we see toxins rising in May. We definitely see things starting to go up in May. And June actually is what seems to be our highest toxin month here. We also have been seeing through the DEC-funded monitoring project, we were seeing early bumps in toxicity even earlier than May. So we started to see samples increasing in toxicity even in April. So that's one of the concerns with warming climate is that the seasonality is disappearing and we're seeing the toxins increasing earlier on in the spring and lasting later into the fall, which a lot of folks have been using like the months with R is safe to harvest. We do see toxins primarily in the summer increase, but as Bruce pointed out, we can have these toxin bumps through the winter or the toxin levels never come down. But I just wanted to put that out there because most of the work that I've done in the Kodiak region, we've seen increasing toxins in May and as early as April.
All right. Yeah, go ahead.
In southern southeast Alaska, April and May are when they start to see high levels.
Right.
And it may peak down there in June.
Yeah. In fact, I'm working with Old Harbor right now on a separate project, and it was a climate-related project, and we wanted to compare to local subsistence sites as well as look at the temperature and salinity data in the region to try to put our finger on the patterns there. But there are concerns definitely from most harvesters that with the warming waters that there's going to be increased toxins earlier in the season, lasting later into the fall.
And it looks like we have maybe 7 minutes left approximately. So, Natalia, I wanted to get to talking about your internship. Could you explain a little bit about what you're doing with this project?
Hi, I'm Natalia, and I work with Miss Julie. I'm an intern, and I help her shucking the clams down in the lab. And what I usually do down there is I shuck the clams, take out the meat, and then drain it, the meat, and then weigh it, and then I just put it in plastic bags and then put it in the freezer.
Yeah. What happens after that?
Well, the samples that Natalia's been working on have been primarily the response samples that I took in early June when we had the illness here. So I went out and collected a variety of samples, many different species and many different locations, and I haven't had the time to handle and process all those. And so Natalia's really been very helpful down in the lab doing the work with me. And Natalia was also one of the students I worked with a couple of years ago at St. Mary's School. And I've also been working with the Kodiak Middle School. And so I've been bringing educational lessons into the classroom regarding PSP. And I have the students take measurements of the clam, shuck, weigh, as Natalia was describing. And then we run a small test using another antibody-based test. And I hope to introduce this current mercury science test into the classroom again so we can start working with this test that we're bringing forward with this project. So, Natalia's seen PSP on a couple different levels, but she's been pretty helpful for me to catch up on my processing and my sample inventory.
How old are you? Well,
so I have a question for Natalia.
You're 14? Go ahead, Bruce.
So Natalia, are you becoming interested enough in this that you might pursue a career in sciences and biology?
I've thought about it. I think shucking clams is fun, and I don't know, I might.
Maybe.
I don't think we need to push her in that direction just yet. She's actually been helping me with a wide variety of different projects. So we were out sampling for some other species and whatnot, and most recently she's been down in the lab.
And Natalia's going to be a freshman this year.
Yeah.
So she has time, right?
She has time to figure
start.
It out.
So Alaska has a robust oyster aquaculture and scallop fishery. Are they going to be affected?
No. Well, currently, both of those industries are monitored and everything that passes through the commercial market gets tested through the DEC lab. So any of the oyster farms, any of the oysters that are grown in our state are tested. Any commercial product is tested. In fact, our scallop fishery, the scallop fishery handles the scallop when they catch it. They shuck the meat, the edible meat, right out. And that portion of meat that we consume when we think of scallops, that's the adductor muscle. And that muscle is not affected and does not retain the toxin. But the rest of the scallop does. So in order to alleviate the industry so they don't have to go through PSP monitoring, they simply discard all other tissues in the scallop and retain only the adductor muscle. And in the case of oysters, they're all going through commercial testing.
All right. And we only have a couple of more minutes, one or two. Is there anything else that you, Julie and Bruce, want listeners to know about this research?
So for food safety, the oyster processors, they try to monitor the environment because they don't want to send in a product to try and market that then doesn't pass the DEC tests. So if we can get this test kit available up to speed and available to the farmers, then they'll definitely benefit, and it'll save everybody a lot of money and a lot of time. The research community will benefit because we can get some real-time data on what's going on in the environment.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Talk the Rock, and we've been speaking with a couple of researchers on a PSP monitoring test kit that is being developed. It's in phase one of 3 years. So thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kayla.